It's Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The news breaking early this morning is ominous indeed, as we now know that there's been a major artillery barrage exchange between North and South Korea. This exchange comes in one of the most tender and sensitive areas in the entire world, where political and military sensitivities have been high now for decades. As a matter of fact, the DMZ, or Demilitarized Zone, that separates North and South Korea has become an international symbol for the kind of military volatility that now seeks, or at least threatens, to set loose mayhem between the two Koreas. The stakes could hardly be higher. You're looking at a massive army in North Korea, and you're looking at enough firepower to destroy the most populated areas in the South. At the same time, South Korea depends upon the United States as its military protector, and in that DMZ and throughout the region in the South, there are numerous, indeed thousands, of American personnel. So what we're looking at here is a matter of incredible national tension and international sensitivity as Tuesday morning dawns. Now, the report coming out of North Korea and out of South Korea is very ominous, as you have reports such as that houses and mountains are on fire and people are evacuating. You can't see very well because of plumes of smoke, said one witness. Another said people are frightened to death and shelling continues as we speak. The images have been clear on YTN television coming from the South, where it appears that about 60 or 70 houses on this inhabited island are now burning. Now, what's burning here may be not only these houses, but the fragile relationship that has held something of a political and military stalemate between North and South Korea ever since the end, and remember that it was never a peace declaration, just merely a cessation of active hostilities between the North and the South. Now, this comes just a day after the Wall Street Journal and other international media have reported that North Korea has now taken decisive steps to enrich uranium against the concern of the international community. As Jay Solomon and Adam Intus report for the Wall Street Journal, the revelation on Saturday came that Pyongyang had already installed thousands of centrifuges to produce nuclear fuel at its Yongbyon nuclear facility. This is raising questions inside Washington's nuclear non-proliferation community about why more wasn't done by a succession of U.S. administrations to block the North's atomic advances. Well, one thing to keep in mind here is that North Korea is a rogue nation. It has been so since the end of the Korean War, and it is so now. It is outside the realm of civilized nations. It does not operate in accordance with the rules of foreign policy or international law. It is a rogue state that is led by an unstable tyrant. It is a country that is preyed upon its own very, very oppressed people. And it got the title of the Hermit Kingdom the hard way by earning it. Christians, along with other observers around the world, will be watching these events with great interest. But Christians should keep particularly in mind that nations, because they are collectives of human beings, often act much like human individuals. There are human individuals that are psychopaths, that simply are outside the rules of normal social behavior. They feel no obligation to the kinds of morality that constrain normal human beings. Well, there are some states, some societies, some institutions and organizations that function in just this way. And when, of course, it is a state with a massive army, with incredible military power, and now with nuclear power as well, we face a rogue nation that is a very real and present danger, not only to South Korea, but to the entire military stability of the world. Needless to say, we'll all be following this story with tremendous interest during the day and likely beyond. Turning to the United States, NPR is out with a fascinating story that addresses one of the issues that we've been talking about in recent weeks, having to do with the rise of the Tea Party and libertarian motivations within the Republican Party, and now strife between libertarian and cultural conservative forces within the conservative movement. Liz Halloran, writing for NPR, suggests that there is now a culture war brewing within the Tea Party. She suggests that libertarian-minded Tea Party activists are now warning freshmen recently elected in the midterm elections that they are to focus on fiscal issues and fiscal issues alone, not to pay attention to social issues. Now, there is a tremendous disagreement that is going on here. As she writes, the recent rumblings of discord between the libertarian wing of the Tea Party movement and white evangelicals Well, this has already reached Capitol Hill. Now, as you look at this particular development, this is something that we've seen coming for a long time. The so-called Tea Party movement includes a good number of persons who are basically libertarian. Even if they are not ideologically libertarian, their primary motivation has been what might be defined as fiscal conservatism. On the other hand, the more traditional conservatives of recent years have been far more interested in cultural issues as well, issues including same-sex marriage and abortion and a host of other related issues. Now, one of the illusions of modern politics is that any political equation or political question can be reduced to something simple. Another illusion is the assumption that we can know exactly why a voter votes in a particular way. This is largely hidden from us. But at the same time, there are worldview issues that have been and are now at stake, and looking to the future, it's clear that the kind of culture war that is warned about in this report from National Public Radio is something that has been looming long before the election and is certain to break forth. Because after all, if indeed the conservative movement is going to focus only on fiscal issues, well, those who had been working for years in the trenches having to do with the issues of abortion and the defense of marriage and the like are going to feel very marginalized within the party. Recent indications are that the Tea Party movement and the Republican resurgence that took place in the midterm elections was largely fueled by evangelical voters. And those evangelical voters came with all of their evangelical concerns. The kinds of statement you see in this news article come down to this. Some are arguing that you have to be a fiscal conservative and focus only on fiscal issues, while on the other side, there are those who are arguing that you can't really be a fiscal conservative unless you are also a social conservative. There's likely to be a very rude awakening for many in the conservative side of the political spectrum when they realize that not all conservatives are alike. Two important arguments need to be asserted here. Number one, it is true that not all conservatives are alike. There are different forms of conservatism, some actually more conservative than others. The conservative movement in America over the last 60 years has had to define itself over against some threats, including the threat of being overtaken by libertarianism. Libertarianism and conservatism share many assumptions, but they are not the same thing. They are united in the belief that human liberty is a basic good to be defended over against the encroachments of an ever more powerful state. But beyond that, conservatives and libertarians operate from very different readings of the culture, very different understandings of the good and the true, and very different understandings of the nature of the political process. Conservatives believe that the main concern should be the society's conserving of values that are important, moral values at the center, institutions such as family and culture. The libertarians, on the other hand, think that government in particular should have nothing to do with these things, that the government ought to be completely outside the picture, leaving individuals with unfettered liberty to define their own ends, their own goods, and go after these without government interference. Now, when it comes to an issue like abortion, conservatives and libertarians come from very different perspectives. Conservatives think that the government should use its power to defend unborn human life. On the other hand, libertarians believe that when it comes to human liberty, perhaps even the liberty of a woman to have an abortion, the government ought to be neutral and have no say whatsoever. A clash is coming. The Tea Party itself is an unstable movement that was largely fed by a great deal of resentment and concern and a great urgency to see a change in the political equation. But as is so often the case, in a mid-year election like this, there's going to be an enormous shifting and sifting on the other side. There are some fascinating debates that lie ahead, and no shortage of surprises as well. Last week, the Obama administration released some new rules for faith-based programs. This goes back to the Bush administration's intention and design to allow religious organizations to participate in social service programs with government funding. Now, the Obama administration has had to confront several thorny issues in the aftermath of the election that brought President Obama to the White House. For one thing, when he was a candidate, President Obama argued against a Justice Department memorandum that had stated that religious organizations that receive this kind of funding should be free to discriminate on religious grounds. Candidate Obama suggested that this was a legal and constitutional abomination. But President Obama has kept the rule basically in place. He has not repudiated the Justice Department memorandum, And he has said that his Justice Department will review cases and challenges on a case-by-case basis. However, they have offered no criteria that are going to be used by the Obama Justice Department to make such determinations. Now, lots at stake here. This is brought to mind by the New York Times, which in Monday's edition issues an editorial in which it declares a flawed faith-based fix. It says this, Mr. Obama's revisions have a glaring omission. Ignoring one of his own important campaign promises and a large coalition of religious education and civil rights groups, the new decree fails to draw a firm line barring employment discrimination on the basis of religious belief. Now, what we face in this case is the secularists' insistence that if religious organizations are going to be involved, they have to effectively cease to be religious organizations. That is, in itself, a constitutional abomination. The argument that the Constitution would require a Christian institution to cease to be Christian is absolutely abhorrent. On the other hand, this is the kind of logic that has prevailed in very many federal courts. So the bottom line in all this is that the New York Times and the secularists are eventually likely to get their way. Whether this is by President Obama relenting under pressure and changing the policy, or if he allows, on the other hand, a federal judge to do the dirty work, eventually it's likely that this Justice Department protection to religious organizations is going to disappear. Now, churches and Christian organizations should have kept this in mind all along. The basic rule of life, an almost unbreakable iron rule of politics, comes down to this. When government offers you money, its hand of control comes with that money. For that reason, I would suggest that no Christian organization should put its soul, its policies, and its convictions and personnel at risk by accepting a dime of federal money. In the end, the big issue is that the faith-based programs may turn out to be all program and no faith. Meanwhile, with Thanksgiving just 2 days away, USA Today on the front page is suggesting that Americans have decided all of a sudden, after an economic recession, to eat out a good deal more. Almost every sector of the restaurant industry reports an uptick in business, and American families are now eating out at the kind of rates they did before the economic recession hit. Now, interestingly enough, coming with that is the cover story in this week's edition of Newsweek magazine on how Americans are increasingly divided by food. New controversies over locavores and locally grown food, over organics versus non-organics, and all the rest are dividing Americans over as basic a reality as food. Now, we really shouldn't be surprised about this because food and cuisine is very much a part of the culture. So, indeed, it can also become a battlefield in the culture war. We're not there yet, but it's interesting that Newsweek would put this kind of cover story right before us in Thanksgiving week. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.